Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
And the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. And if you want to speak to Michael, then press 1, and that lets me know, and I'll put you in queue. Today is our Memorial Day celebration, day 121. And welcome, Michael.
Delighted to be here. We're honored to have you with us on the show, and we are just blessed by the opportunity to serve you. And our process is that of learning, in particular, the ancient Aramaic idea of forgiveness, and learning how to change the internal dynamics that tends to run most people's lives. Our invitation for Memorial Day is to honor those who have been murdered in war, who have been forced to murder, who have been injured, maimed, damaged in any way, shape, or form, physically, mentally, emotionally, and the emotional and mental damage is just horrendous for those participants in war. And so we're here to support changing that dynamic on planet Earth. And changing the dynamic for the families of those who've been touched by that atrocity called war. How are we going to do this? Well, our invitation to you is that you'd be willing today to look at and address one issue in your life where you have some form of hostility or fear. And in addressing that hostility or fear, the willingness to be responsible. And to recognize that that particular form of hostility or fear is not about whoever you're looking at, whoever your mind wants to make into your enemy. That hostility or fear is a warning signal that there's something going on inside of you. And it's about changing that which is going on inside of you, about becoming responsible, shifting and changing the dynamics of hostility and fear on planet Earth. As we as human beings do that, what's going to happen is we're going to individually and collectively eradicate the cause of war. And so that's our project, that of the process of forgiveness. Now, if you're not familiar with the forgiveness conversation, you've maybe been caught in the culture's totally false idea of forgiveness. You know, we're such a codependent culture. We're such a culture of hostility or fear that the normal conversation, you know, let's say, for instance, we see somebody in tears. The normal conversation for the average person is, well, who hurt you? What did they do to you? Who did that to you? And that it's all become totally and completely externally focused. And, of course, our kind of tongue-in-cheek idea around that is, you'll notice if you've been through a particular form of upset, a particular painful reality, 87 different times with 42 different people, that you're the one that was there every time. That particular painful reality is all about you. It is not about them. And once you realize that, then you have a chance to change that dynamic in yourself. And as you change that dynamic, everything around you changes. So we're here to support you in doing that. If you'd like to tap into the forgiveness work that we're speaking about, if you go to our website, www.whyagain.com, www.whyagain.com, and on the right-hand side, you'll see a link that says download worksheets. That link is the how-to of Aramaic forgiveness. If you look at the first four links under that, you'll see the whole story, the whole process of how you change the internal dynamics that are going on inside of you, but that your culture teaches you is the fault of someone outside of you. And we're looking to support you, letting go of the fault and blame game, and recognize, and, you know, one of the questions I'll often ask people in the workshop, and, of course, everybody kind of gives a giggle and raises their hand, how many of you have been accused of saying something you never said, of doing something you never did? Everybody puts their hand up. And I'll say, well, and how many times now? Let's see. Put your hand down when I get to your number. Once, twice, three, four. When we get to infinity, everybody's hand goes down. It's happened thousands of times. Well, does that mean that all those people who've been accusing you are liars? Because it didn't happen, right? Right, it didn't happen. Well, you know, there are some liars in there, of course, but by and large, most people are telling the truth. They heard you say what they said you said. They saw you do what they said you did. It happened. It didn't happen in actuality. It didn't happen in the external world. It happened in their internal world, in their reality. And once we have a certain form, a certain quality of hostility or fear that we don't want to deal with, that we stay in denial about and dissociate from, what we'll do is we'll make up pictures out of that data of how everybody else did it to us. And that's called living in an hallucination. And if you've ever been accused of saying something you never said and doing something you never did, notice that when that person who accused you, they were in 100% of the time some form of hostility or fear, right? Hostility or fear is a marker for them hallucinating. They created an image that they believe, they heard words that came from brain cells that they believe you said that you didn't say. Now, of course, the lesson to get out of that is the last time you were in hostility and fear and pointed a finger at somebody and said, and when you said this and when you did that, that didn't happen either. This whole process, when there's hostility or fear is a marker that there's something going on inside of us that we need to be responsible for and forgive. And forgiveness has nothing to do with letting somebody else off the hook for what's happening in us. We've been sold a bill of goods. We've been sold Greek forgiveness. Forgiveness has been Hellenized. It was turned into a Greek idea of, well, you know, you just let everybody else off the hook for the terrible things they're doing to you. Well, in the Aramaic language, you would never be invited to forgive another. You would never be invited to forgive yourself. You would not say, I forgive you, I forgive myself. What you would be handed is a tool, and that's what's in those first four links we talked about, for accessing that which you've hidden from yourself that you're making these pictures up of about everybody else. Hostility and fear is a marker in your mind. It's an indicator that your mind is using some form of dissociated information to make pictures of everybody else and make it everybody else's fault. You'll notice that you're the one who's feeling it. And another one of my favorite tongue-in-cheek lines is, if they're the one with the problem, why are you the one with the pain? If, as you insist, they're the one with the problem, obviously they would be the one with the pain, but notice that they're not. So we're going to ask you to check out that dynamic, that those links on whyagain.com. Put your pen to the paper. Start doing some forgiveness work. I mean, real forgiveness work, not letting them off the hook. Stop forgiving people. Stop forgiving yourself. Replace that with the truth about forgiveness. I now have a tool. It's called the Reality Management Worksheet, with which I go inside my mind and I change what's happening inside my mind. I remove what never belonged. That's the process of forgiveness. So, Ginny, do we have any callers or any questions in the chat room?
Actually, we have Miss Evie on the line. The other caller has not called in, so we will turn her on. Hi, and welcome to the show, Evie.
Thank you so much, Steve. I'm, you know, glad to be here.
Well, delighted. Nice to have you with us. And Miss Evie contacted me yesterday through email after tapping into our show, And she's written a book called Divorce Vows, which is very akin to our hearts with the commitment and the invitation that in order to live as sane human beings, we need to live in a connected space of love. And so Edie and I got to chat yesterday, and after chatting, and she sent me a download of her book, a PDF of her book, and sat up into the wee hours this morning reading, enjoyed it. I love your style of writing, and the way you shift ideas around is awesome. You're doing great work, Edie. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much.
So tell us about, did you get my email this morning? I sent you an email with a couple of things in it.
Yes, I did, and I was reading your commitment, and then I was also reading your chapter 24, the PDF. So, in fact, I had even copied, and I was making notes, and I copied that very line that you were talking about. Let's see if I can find it. It was the one about the hostility and the anger.
Right.
That one just jumped out at me. And what's amazing to me is that I ended up actually writing a book that was a guide to help me be who I really want to be, and I forget. And I struggle every day with my relationships because it's an ongoing process. And it takes a lot of discipline and practice to do it on an ongoing, you know, every day. And then not having people in your life that are doing it with you, you really have to struggle. So.
Well, you know, now, in terms of the forgiveness process, so, you know, one of the things I work a lot with in my work is language. And so when you recognize that in just, you know, in three or four sentences, use the idea fairly emotionally about struggle two or
right.
three times, my invitation to you would be to download that worksheet process and start doing some worksheets around struggle.
Oh, absolutely. Right.
Yeah, and certainly it's a whole lot easier to live your life and do your work with someone who's playing. There's an ancient African proverb that I love to use that says, if you want to go quickly, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And
well,
so
I like that one.
And you know, it's just that's why we foster and create support groups. That's why we're doing this radio show, is to give people ongoing support for taking their healing and their process to another level and really moving forward. And it takes a community. Doing it in isolation is a tough, tough job. Very few people can stick to the process.
Right, and that's where the struggle comes in. But once you resonate and you band together with other people that are doing it, then it becomes so much easier because you don't feel isolated, you don't feel alone, you don't feel like you're doing something really odd,
right.
And if it doesn't work, and we all need to be mirrors to each other, and so I really appreciate just your radio show and these worksheets because I haven't had a chance since we just talked yesterday. I haven't had a chance to download them and actually put them to practice in my own life, but I think they're wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah, and your ideas where you have the vows and what it reminded me of course, in our healing through relationships, as I wrote my email yesterday, in our healing through relationships, we invite people to take that commitment. You know, I promise to trust you enough to tell you the truth and treat you lovingly, gently, and with respect, just to take that commitment and use it on a daily basis in their relationships and make that the personal code that they live by. And as I read your book and I read each chapter headed up with a vow, my thought would be, well, don't wait till the divorce. Start doing that from the beginning. And actually, if you add your vows up, it comes up to very much something like the commitment that we use in our workshop.
Right. Well, it's interesting, Michael. Well, what's interesting is after I finished writing the book, I looked back over it and realized, oh, I wrote about my marriage. Because I've never been divorced, and my husband's been divorced, but we will have been married 25 years. So the vows are actually very applicable to people, whether they want to stay together and save a marriage, or you can take the exact same vows and apply them to two people that feel like that maybe divorce is in their best interest. So they ended up being very universal.
Yeah, and they could take the same exact ideas the day of their wedding and start to apply.
Right, exactly.
Like a personal code of action right from day one, because what you really have in those vows is a personal code. And to step forward. So why don't you share some of the vows with us? They're really, I really appreciate the way you put them together. They're very cool. And I would certainly, hand your book to somebody who's getting married today and say, here you go. Here are your vows. Start working with these.
Well, it kind of goes along with, in order to learn how to live, you have to know how to die. And so I think if you start with, okay, if we were to ever get divorced, honey, this is how we're going to do it. And then you do that process, you realize, I guess if we do this, we don't need to get divorced. So I'm hoping to save a lot of marriages with my book. But if I can't save a marriage, then I hope to save divorces of being nasty and contentious that they have become to be for way too many people. So.
And what if we totally eradicated the divorce conversation from your vows? And just said to somebody from day one, rather than if we are going to get divorced, let's do it this way. How about if they just took the vows from day one and said, like your first vow, doing it from memory is, I'm going to remember that we're friends. What if people just from day one in their marriages took that vow and made it a wedding vow? Oh,
right.
I'm going to remember when my hostility and fear comes up that we're friends. Oh, that's right.
Right. Well, and that basically comes from my marriage.
I understand.
My husband and I were always best friends.
If you read the commitment, that's autobiographical too. You know, we really can't do anything that doesn't come from our own brain cells. So I certainly understand that. Everything that with developing the commitment that I used, that I sent you a copy of, which incidentally those who are listening to the show, you can download free from our website, as well as the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again. You can download free in the commitments in that. But the whole thing is, every time I came across an issue in my relationships, I would look at, okay, what do I need to put in the commitment to make this issue become healable, to deal with this? So that's, in essence, where everything that I do has come from, my own process.
Right.
Spending time to understand it. And you've obviously... with the way you assembled your material, you've obviously been doing some pretty awesome work on your own.
In my own marriage?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Obviously.
Oh, absolutely.
I've got three adult stepchildren that are in their 30s and 40s and three teenagers, and you don't survive all those years and ages without... having some kind of a guideline. And this basically is my guideline on how we've stayed married. I just recognize that the people that need help the most are the ones that are, have the word divorce has come up in their vocabulary. They are afraid that they're going to get divorced, or the process has already started, or they're still feeling pain from a post-divorce from many years ago, and that relationship is still with them. So the reason that I title it Divorce Vows and targeting people that are in that state is because I just figured that's where the most pain is. Although my dad, bless his heart, he passed away a year ago at 94, he said my next book should be premarital vows or relationship vows, and I will actually just take these exact same ones and put them in a book that is geared just to relationships that are starting out and have not run into the big bumps yet. They just want some guidelines.
Exactly, yeah. Your dad and I are in harmony with each other. That's exactly what I'm suggesting is that, right from day one in a marriage, they could be, you could easily, as easily rewrite. Actually, your second book is already written, and it could be wedding vows and just change the whole language from divorce to creating an awesome life together and using those vows. So share
right.
some of them with us, if you would.
Well, the first one is it's on friendship, because I figure that a good marriage, a good divorce, a good relationship, if anything, really needs to be based on some form of friendship. So the first part of the vow, and they're all stated in two parts. The first part is very proactive, which you're willing to do, and the second part is more passive, because I could be talking to people that are very resistant and not willing to actively do anything, so I give them an alternative. Just, okay, if you're not willing to do something, are you willing not to do something? So the first part of that once was, I will remember a time that there was that we were friends. And if someone has a hard time, given the state of their relationship at that point, then the second part of the vow merely states, I will not turn you into the enemy. And I do that all the time with my marriage, because there's times when my husband and I get into conflict with, especially raising children and dealing with adult children and family, other family members. And there's times that we're just on opposite sides of an issue, and I have to keep remembering, he's not my enemy.
Right.
And he really is my friend, and he's been my friend for 30 years now, and I'm not going to sacrifice that friendship. And I think that could go a long way for people that feel that maybe divorce is in their best interest, because I'm not going to be naive to think that every marriage should make it, all the way to the end. Because none of us have relationships, all relationships in our life that make it all the way till death do us part. You know, we have many, many relationships in our lives that go through a divorce, whether it's parents, siblings, friendship, next door neighbors, friends, coworkers. We have lots of lives and people in our lives that we just don't necessarily agree with, and we take different paths, and we kind of go through many divorces. And so a lot of these vows can be applied to a lot of different relationships in our lives. So that was my first one, and that was my launching point, was friendship.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you want me to continue on, or?
Yeah, share several of them. I think
sure, okay. The next one was vow two, and it had to do with the ego and recognizing your ego. And so the vow states, I will notice when my ego's desires and fears are creating conflict. The second part is, I will not discount your ego's desires or fears, because I think really it's our egos that get us into all the hot water. And until we recognize that it's our ego that's doing all the nasty work, then we can't resolve the issue. We just keep building on top of our one fear built on top of another, and we're not really recognizing what's going on. And once we go, oh, it's my ego, and you can step back from it, look at it from a different perspective, and invite your spirit to come in and try to handle the problem and see if your spirit doesn't give you a different perspective. So that was the second vow. The third vow is on change. And that's a huge one if you're going to have any relationship that goes on for any length of time, because we're constantly changing and aging and taking on new ideas and new thoughts. And to grow old with somebody, whether it's in a marriage or even a friendship, you have to acknowledge and accept the change that's going to take place. So vow three says, I will accept that as we have changed as individuals, our relationship has changed also. Second part of vow says, I will not hold on to past perceptions of who we were to each other. And we probably all had relationships that we had when we were younger, and that person still remembers us as a teenager or as a kid or some young person, and we want to say, but I'm 40-some-odd years old now. I'm not the irresponsible teenager you knew. You know, let go of that perception of who I was to you. And and relationships, marital relationships, have to go through that same, process. So vow three was on change. Vow four had to do with communication. And it says, I will communicate with integrity and treat you with respect. That was sort of like your commitment. One of your commitments had to do with that.
Yeah.
And the second part is, I will not lie, be deceitful, or show contempt for you as a person. And all of these vows are a challenge to do 100% of the time, and we're going to slip up. And the only thing to do once you slip up is go, oh, yeah, I slipped up. And then you kind of get back on the horse again. But most people just aren't even recognizing when they're slipping up. and they get farther and farther and farther off track. And so the goal of my balance is just to bring to the surface a little bit more consciousness on who we are in our relationships. And by being a little bit more aware, we will do less damage to each other, and we will open up the space to grow and to heal and to really take relationships forward, whether people stay married or whether people get divorced. I've known a lot of people that say, you know, our relationship is so much better now that we're divorced. We made much better friends than we did married partners.
Mm-hmm.
So,
one of the reasons in the point of the work that I do that's true is because we refuse to forgive in us that which we've been projecting on our partner. And that'll be the, you know, the next vow that you go to is your one on forgiveness. And we're going to offer a whole different perspective. There's an Aramaic technology that was taught on the planet 2,000 years ago and was almost instantly disappeared when it became Hellenized. Hellenized meaning that the Greeks took it over and turned it into Greek thought. And so we have this culture that's based in, well, you know, you did something really terrible that caused all this pain inside of me, but it's okay, I'll forgive you. And of course, when I let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me, I've done nothing to change what's happening inside of me. The awesome thing about the worksheet process and the forgiveness process is that when we forgive, instead of I let you off the hook, I actually pick up the tool with which I go inside myself. Let's say you and I have interacted and up comes some kind of fear. So this fear which I have in our relationship today, if I stop and ask myself the question, did I know this fear before I met this person I'm now blaming it on? 100% of the time, 100% of the people, if they're honest, will say, yes, I sure did. And so when I forgive you because I knew a fear before I met you and before this happened between us, I've done nothing to change the root of my fear. In the Aramaic, you'd be handed a tool which you go inside and find the dissociated part of your own mind and remove it. So forgiveness has nothing to do, and the whole conversation in the culture is Greek, and it's backwards. It's actually a damaging conversation, because while there can be a benefit from pardoning someone, what's happened is we've had pardoning substituted for forgiveness, and there's certainly a benefit from pardoning, because if you do something that brings hurt up in me, I can let you off the hook for the fact that my hurt came up. But if I call that forgiveness rather than what it is, pardoning, then I'll think I'm finished with it, which guarantees that I get to live the title of my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Because sooner or later, someone is going to step on that reality in me and bring it up. Whereas if I choose to pardon you, okay, I'm going to let, you know, as your vow says, I will forgive us both of us for our misunderstandings. I will let us both off the hook for the misunderstandings we have, and then I'll recognize that there's something inside of me that I need to remove, some form of hostility or fear, and that's where I'll step in and do the forgiveness work. And so that's a wrinkle that we'll offer you that gives a whole new meaning. You know, we live in a culture that you hear therapists say, well, you know, that person really hurt you, didn't they? It's like, that person can't hurt me. I mean, could somebody physically cancel the thought, grab my arm and break it, and physically hurt me? Yes, that can. But as far as all the other stuff goes, nobody can hurt me unless I have hurt inside of me to be resonated. And no matter what, you put two people in a room together long enough, often enough, and they're going to step on each other's hurts and pains. If we stop the game of denial, dissociation, and projection and go, oh, gee, honey, you just stepped on one of my hurts. I really need to do some forgiveness work and let go of this. Gee, you know, what just came up for me was all this sadness and hurt when you said thus and so. I'm going to apply forgiveness to that. I'll pardon you, and I'll apply forgiveness to that and remove that from me. Now my hurt is gone. I may have to do that. You know, if you go back to the master teacher of forgiveness, they said,
how many of these darn worksheets do we have to do? Is 7 enough? And the answer in Aramaic, of course, no, 77 times 70. So when I go through the layers of my own hurt and pain, it's obviously in the context of relationship that I'm going to do it. And when I realize that, then I have the opportunity to step up to a whole new level of whenever the person who's closest to me shows me my pain, to work through and remove that pain rather than lock into, well, you know, I'll forgive you, but I'll never forget this, or I'll, you know, be making my plans to get even somewhere someday. Really recognize my hurt is a product of my mind. It's about me. It's not about anybody else. And the whole culture's stuck in a codependent mode. Everybody else did it to me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and a victimized mode, too.
Oh, yeah, the victim mode. Oh, yeah, that's all. The whole thing is codependence. Our definition of codependence is that, and we do a workshop called Codependence to Interdependence. And the definition of that, of codependence, is that when I think that somebody else can cause a reality to happen in my mind, I'm in codependence.
Mm-hmm.
And when I go into that codependent state, you made me angry, sad, afraid, or happy. Same thing. If I say to you, you made me really happy, I'm in codependence. I'm pretending that you have the power to cause something inside of me. Now, the alternative to that is interdependence. Gee, honey, thanks for that awesome compliment you just gave me. That really brought some really high-level happiness up in me. Thank you. So I've acknowledged the person for the support that they were, and I've acknowledged that the happiness is a product of what's happening inside of me, and that's where the power lies. Or if I'm in pain, gee, honey, when you said thus and so, that brought a lot of hurt up in me. I realize I've got some hurt to heal. Would you support me healing this hurt? And a whole different conversation takes place, and we move from codependent relationships into interdependent relationships. And that's what I see your vows really helping people to do. It's really cool, and I certainly love your style of writing.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so other people have commented on the voice. I try to make it as reader-friendly and conversational as I could, because I knew that the audience would be wide as far as their experience and then where they were coming from as far as their level of spiritual acceptance on how spiritual were they going to really be in this state of a struggling relationship, you know. And that's the challenge is to knowing who your audience is and leading them very gently through the process and know where to start with them.
Right. Yes.
And I think that was one of the reasons in the forgiveness chapter where I started with myself, because that chapter changed my life, because I had to really dig down deep and think about, well, you know, what does forgiveness mean to me? When I forgive somebody or when I want somebody to forgive me, and what is it? What does forgiveness mean and what does it not mean? And I had to actually go into the negative. What is forgiveness not? Before I could really grapple with what forgiveness is. Because I think that we've all learned a very cockeyed version, like you said, of what forgiveness is. And that it's people think that you're supposed to stop hurting. And it's like, no, you don't. Just because you forgive somebody doesn't mean that necessarily the pain goes away. But other people, you know, they think that that if you forgive somebody, then you're giving them permission to do it again. So no, forgiveness doesn't mean that either. It doesn't mean that you accept or tolerate what somebody's doing or has done to you. And it doesn't mean that there's not going to be consequences. It just may mean that you're not the one that's going to dole out the consequences. And that it also doesn't mean that you get, you know, amnesia. You don't forget something happened to you. And then also it doesn't require somebody else to say they're sorry. You can forgive somebody regardless of what
we're going to change that conversation. We're going to invite people, please, never forgive anybody ever again. Never forgive yourself, never forgive another. We're shifting that conversation into, if you interact with somebody and you hurt, and one of the reasons why, you know, we think, well, forgiveness won't necessarily stop the hurt, is because what we're doing is we're generating hurt inside ourselves, and then letting somebody else off the hook for it. And we do pardoning work, which is the Hellenized idea of forgiveness that the whole world believes in. So
right.
When you shift the conversation and you take that reality management worksheet, and I'd be delighted to have another conversation with you once you've done a few of those, because what you're going to see is, oh, this is how I find the part of me with which I hurt myself. Now when I forgive, I stop hurting. I put an end to the hurt. I remove
mm-hmm.
hurt from my physiology. If I'm not given the technology with which to do that, and it's 2,000-year-old Aramaic technology, if I'm not given that technology and I don't know how to do it, of course I'll say that, you know, well, I forgive you, but my hurt goes on. When you actually take on the tool of forgiveness, and I see it all the time, I see people who'll start to use that tool, and they turn around and their partner does the same thing as they did yesterday, and all of a sudden they're just like, oh, gee, honey, it looks like you're in pain, you know, to say that to me again. And can I support you in healing rather than, oh, my God, here I am, you hurt me again. Because all hurt is an internal process. So we're going to invite you to maybe consider shifting that conversation into, yeah, we can end the pain, the trauma that we experience through forgiveness. And certainly, I'm in 100% agreement with you. It's got nothing to do with giving them permission to do it again. You absolutely hold somebody accountable for their behavior when it's off base. But if you do it out of a mind that's connected to love, having done your own healing, your own internal forgiveness work, then all of a sudden you have a space of compassion and wholeness for that behavior, as opposed to a space of punishment and blame.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little different, an extremely large difference in the process of letting others off the hook for what's happening inside of us and literally taking in hand and changing what's happening inside of us.
I probably should have done some of your worksheets before I wrote my book.
Well, no, that's always changeable. I think your book
is
awesome. That's why we're devoting the time we are to it, because I think you've done a great job and a great service for people. And by the way, for anybody who's interested in getting your book, how do they get it? What form is it in? Is it in a printed form, or is it just in a Kindle PDF? Or tell me about that.
Oh, it's in both. They can actually get a copy off my website, which is just www.divorcefiles.com, and you can get a signed copy that way. You can also download the ebook if someone would rather have the ebook off my website. And somebody can also just go to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com and order it there. And then the Kindle, it's available in Kindle format. So however anybody likes to choose to do it.
All right. So share some of your other vows with us.
Vow 6 is on gratitude. And it says, I will be thankful for the good that came out of our relationship. Second part is, I will not emphasize the negative aspects of what has transpired between us. And then basically it's just to help keep their focus on what they accomplished and what was good about their relationship, whether it be their kids, the fact that they finished school, they started a business, they built a home together, they had some good trips, they created good relationships with friends, whatever it might be. The relationship wasn't all for naught, and that they need to concentrate on all the good that came out of it and not be focusing on all the negative aspects of it. Because what we focus on, we just create more. So if you focus on the negative,
oh, that's
then
for
even
sure.
After the divorce decree comes, that you're just going to continue to get more of the negative as opposed to actually bettering your relationship post-divorce and feeling like that the relationship really was and still can be a positive force in your life.
When you take charge, I was just going to add that when you take charge of your own mind and your own life, and you make a choice to focus on the constructive and to forgive the destructive, that just opens such awesome spaces. And so I love your seventh vow.
Right. Yeah, that one
shit.
Is on,
that,
on the
shit.
People
that
around you.
Pardon me. Go ahead.
It says, I will promote a positive environment that will support a new relationship. And basically having it create a new relationship between the spouses. And then it says, I will not keep company with disparaging people. Because how many people that are going through a divorce like to buddy up with a friend that had a very contentious divorce, or they hire attorneys that are very conflict-oriented. And so the people that you have around you really, you know, help you create the space of what your relationship is, you know, what it's going to be contained in. And so because that that chapter starts out that, it, you know, it is true that we become the company we keep. So if somebody wants to have a peaceful and an amicable relationship in a divorce process, then it's very important to be around people that are going to support that, you know, including, you know, the attorney process. And that's the chapter that I am, that I talk about, the collaborative law and mediators and how to actually go through the legal part of that with a positive attitude. Then,
right.
Then about number eight, I'll turn to that. It says, I will be a constructive participant when I interact with you, and I will not engage in destructive behavior. And that basically is just to help keep, you know, people pay attention to what they're doing and saying, and not get into that destructive mode of feeling like that they need to tear down the marriage. Because if I really liked it or I wanted to be constructive about it, then maybe we shouldn't be getting divorced. And then that goes in with the vow six on gratitude. It seems like people feel like they have to hate each other in order to get divorced. And one time I was having dinner with a minister, and he says, I think that the people shouldn't get divorced because they hate each other. They should get divorced because they love each other. They recognize they're not good for each other. And they love each other, you know, enough to say, you know what, I think it really is best if we go our separate ways. And I thought that was interesting to come from the mouth of a minister.
Yeah. And, of course, that's all part of the projection and the codependent conversation. You made me this way. One of the things we point out in our work is that if we had never defiled our temples, that is, if we'd never put any form of hostility or fear into our own physiology, then the purpose of life would be aliveness, joy, and creativity. Once we defile our temples, once we start putting hostility or fear, or once we accept the hostility and fear that comes to us from our genes, literally from our genetics, there's an interesting video out there you can Google, or actually there's a link on our website called The Ghost in Your Genes, and they're showing how these emotional states are passed on and damage from previous generations are passed on. So if our temple is defiled, what we offer is that when we do that, the purpose of life changes, and at that moment, the purpose of life is to kick us right square in the limitation, to show us what we're holding on to. And the minute that we intercourse with someone, we exchange genetics, literally, energetically, and that all of a sudden now our partner has access to the most destructive parts of us that we've denied and dissociated from. So the awesome gift of the relationship is that when one's in codependence and look what you've done to me, and, you know, that gentleman's conversation of you divorce somebody because you love them because you're not good for them would move more in the direction of, you know, from the point of view of the work that I've developed, would be, gee, I noticed that I'm stepping on some of your genetic toes. You know, I remember when you were telling me about how your mom used to do that, how your dad used to do that to you, and here we are, and you're in the middle of that pain, so I'm here, as opposed to being responsible for what's going on inside of you. I'm here to hold the space for you to go, oh, I'm hurting because I have something inside of me that I've not forgiven. Instead of blaming you for the destructive effects I'm experiencing in my physiology, I'm going to apply forgiveness to what that hurt that's in my physiology and remove it. Thank you for showing it to me, as opposed to the blame game of, look at the destructive effect you have on me. My physiology can't produce something that's not in it. And when I get close enough to someone, they become the one who can show me the things I most deeply need to heal. And when I recognize that, then it is through that interaction in relationship that, you know, the last chapter of the My Commitment that I sent you, if anything unlike love comes up, rather than blaming you, I'll hold this in my heart and listen as we each learn to speak, experience, and be responsible for our own realities. Gee, I have a reality of pain here. I think I'll work through it. Thanks for showing it to me. I'd totally forgotten it was there. Thank you, dear partner, for showing me that pain rather than look what you did to me again. Look how you made me feel. So I'm going to be there. I'll hold the space and keep communication open as we each learn to heal and celebrate life together. And all of a sudden it becomes a whole different process and a whole different game. And the basic, as far as the work we do a course called Laws of Living. And in that course, what we point out is if I, in my inside of me, hook up enough stress to my brain's image of you as my partner, and I refuse to heal and deal with my internal stress, then I'm going to have to separate from you in some way, shape, or form, whether it's actual divorce or psychological divorce, which most people do, you know, years before they ever physically divorce. But when I recognize that the stress and the pain that I'm feeling is mine and it's internal to me, then I get to work through that stress and pain because you stepped on it for me, rather than look what you did to me. That's the language of interdependence as opposed to the language of codependence. And, you know, when I look through and I hear each of your commitments, which, again, I think they're awesome, each one of them, I know it starts out with what I'm going to do, and then it speaks about what I'm not going to do. And, you know, a little tweak there might be speak about what you're going to do, and then heal the tendency to, you know, speak negatively or destructively or think, you know, get together with negative people rather than, you know, getting, you know, I'm not going to get together with negative people, perhaps. And what I'm going to do is consciously choose friends that support my wholeness and aliveness. And so as we move into that direction and let go of, you know, our whole culture is so steeped in codependence that our very language is based in codependence. And the belief that somebody else makes things happen inside of me is a totally codependent belief. And so our work is to assist people in developing the strengths and the skills to really truly be responsible for what's happening in their lives and in their marriages and in their family systems and in their culture, and to keep cleaning up the parts of them that participate and create that. The hostilities and fears, the griefs, the pains, and the traumas, and, you know, they tend to be generational.
Oh, that's for sure.
Yep.
That's definitely for sure. Do you think that there are going to be some people that could be in a relationship that their fears and the generational, you know, emotions are getting tweaked and brought up, and maybe that's just not the best person for them at that time, and maybe separation and doing work by themselves is probably more appropriate?
Well, of course, if one doesn't have the tools, you know, there's in our codependence work, one of the ideas I talk about is that the so-called love relationship, you know, and basically what most of the world calls a love relationship is really a relationship based in matching bags of garbage.
Right, right.
And it's not a really a love relationship. It's a relationship based on approval. If you can help me to stay away from looking at my bags of garbage, then I'll say, I love you. What it really means is I approve of you. But by God, if you get close enough to my garbage, I'll dump the whole bag on it and on you and blame you for it. So the alternative to that, and certainly that relationship, when it's entered into through codependence and one who lives in the victim language of blame, you made me, this is your fault. Yeah, that person is going to have difficulty being in virtually any relationship because sooner or later somebody's going to step on their pain. The alternative would be if we handed people, and that's what our work is about, if we handed people the tool with which to do your vows, you know, especially the first half of each of the vows, handed the tool to do that from day one, And they're everybody's a perfect relationship. They could be in relationship with absolutely anybody. And what they do is they heal. Now, of course, you know, ideally, in that case, we're talking about the cooperative relationship where both people are going, okay, I'm ready to learn these vows. I'm ready to learn that, you know, if I look at, say, for instance, your first vow, I'm going to remember that we're friends. If I've lived the life of, you know, well, I've got this friend, Charlie, and one day he said what I didn't like, so I kicked him out, and I had this friend, Bill, and, you know, one day he looked at my friend the wrong way and said something nasty about me, so I kicked him out, and I did him, and I did him, and I did him. Well, certainly, sooner or later, we're going to have to throw everybody out of our lives if we live that way.
That's true.
If we give people the tools with which to, in the middle of their rage at somebody, if people could just stop and live your first vow. Oh, that's right, we're friends. My mind is making up a whole story about this person that, well, maybe they did something, but maybe it doesn't mean what I think it means. Maybe what I think it means is what it would mean if I did that. And so I'm going to give up believing that that's true about Charlie and remember we're friends. All of a sudden, Charlie just supported me in healing by the aberrant behavior that he did. And so, literally, when you start to approach life, and especially relationship from that angle, everything becomes the opportunity to learn forgiveness. Can this circumstance, can this situation bring up some form of trauma and pain? If I've lived all my life blaming somebody else for my trauma and pain, of course, it's going to be an insane relationship. But exactly the same relationship that is insane, when, even if I just lived the first vow, every time my stuff, my rage, my fear, my grief, my pain comes up, if I could just live Edie's first vow, oh yeah, we're friends. Everything in my life would transform. And through this relationship, you know, the workshop I do, when I first started doing it, so about 30 years ago, I called the workshop Healing Your Relationships. And then one day I had this insight that there's no such thing as a diseased relationship. Every relationship is a perfect creation, and it's through our relationships that we get to heal. Just that first vow, if in the moment of my major rage and upset I could go, oh yeah, that's right, Charlie and I are friends, I have the tool to start to shift my mind. That's why I like your vows so much. And, you know, they're very much in harmony with exactly what we're doing. So we've only got a few minutes. Let's make sure we get through. Could you share the rest of the vows and your website once again on how to get a hold of your book?
Sure, okay. Vow 9.
The book is Divorce Vows, by the way.
Oh.
Right. I was just going to share for the audience who may be tuned in late that the title of the book is Divorce Vows, and we're talking to the author, Edie. And how do I pronounce your last name, Edie?
Oh, it's San Giorgio.
San Giorgio. Okay.
San Giorgio. Like
very
Giorgio.
Okay.
Right.
So for our listening audience, we're speaking with Edie San Giorgio, who's written an awesome book called Divorce Vows, which I think should also be her second book, Wedding Vows, because you're right on track with it, and it's awesome. So share the rest of them before we complete the show, if you would.
Certainly. Vow 9, it has to do with parenting. It says, I will think of parenting our children as a team effort. The second part is, I will not create sides that others must choose from. And so that's really to help people not do that dividing line where children are having to choose between their mom or their dad, or friends have to choose sides, because we've all experienced having friends in our life that got divorced and we weren't sure if we were supposed to stay in touch with the wife or the husband, and then we ended up not staying in touch with either one of them.
No.
So that to help other, you know, not just children. Vow 10, I will support our extended relationships. Second part is, I will not discourage our family members from caring for one another. And that's to help, you know, the extended family of grandparents and aunts and uncles and relatives, that sometimes a daughter-in-law can be very close to her husband's mother, and there's no reason if you get divorced that relationship should suffer along with, a divorce. If let each relationship have its own lifeline and let it pan out as it should. And if someone wants to stay in touch with somebody that was connected to the other side of the family, I just wanted to be supportive of that.
Cool.
Vow 11 has to do with happiness. And says, I will respect and support your potential. Second part is, I will not obstruct your path to happiness. Because I really feel like that if you are supportive of the other person going on with their life and being happy, that's the best way for you to have your own happiness, is not spending all your energy trying to block someone else's.
I agree with that one.
And then vow 11. Oh, that was vow 11. I'm doing this one-handed with my book. I don't have them exactly memorized where I can do them off the top of my head. I find it easier if I have my cheat sheet. Vow 12, I will acknowledge that part of me came from my experience of being part of you, and I will not forget that we have shared memories. I think there's a lot of people that have this feeling that if they get divorced, it's like, okay, it's all done. It's in the past. I can forget about it and pretend that the relationship didn't really exist, or it's this vague memory, and there's this, you know, line of demarcation that once I get the divorce decree, hey, it's going to be over with. And the truth is, that's just a piece of paper. And that your relationship will continue to be with you forever. And it's part of who you are. And until we were able to acknowledge that and bless it, we're going to keep having this resistance to it. We've all had relationships way back in our teen years, and a song comes on the radio, and boom, we are back in that relationship, remembering how we felt and what we were doing. And that's going to continue on, you know, throughout our lives. And I just think it's important for people to honor what their marriage was to them, and to recognize that it's going to be a part of who they've become, and not try to deny that. So, and that's awesome. That was the 12th and then the final vow. So, and Michael, thank you so much for allowing me to share with you and your audience my book. I just was so tickled when I ran across the website and your show yesterday, and I appreciate you contacting me back.
Well, I'm delighted, and you know, I think we still have much more to share, so I'd like to make sure to stay in touch with you. Once again, your website, if people want to order your book either in a PDF or a Kindle or a paperback copy.
It's www.divorcevows.com. And I love to work with people that are struggling, wanting to try to figure out where the relationship is going. I'm a life coach and NLP practitioner, and I like working with people that are wanting to make a relationship work for them, whatever that's going to look like for them.
Right. Cool. Awesome. Well, I love it. And, you know, the second half of each of your vows are the behaviors that our culture has become so steeped in their codependent states. So I would see each of the second half of your vows being the space where, you know, as opposed to I'm not going to do this, what I'm going to do is heal the tendency in me to, you know, create sides and separate us. I'm going to heal the tendency in me to blame you. I'm going to heal. But these are all opportunities for us to really learn to forgive and to remove the multi-generational insanities that our culture has, you know, placed upon us. One of the first questions that we ask in our Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, actually Jeannie, my wife, whose voice you heard on the show earlier, she opened that workshop, and she always opens it with a question. How many have ever held a newborn child? And then ask people to describe the essence of a newborn. And the words that 100% of people in 100% of the places on the planet, whatever culture, use to describe the newborn are always something about this awesome presence of love. And the reason for that we offer is because that's the stuff we're made of. And the whole idea of the work of healing is to return to that and to forgive everything that our generations have put in on us or into us that is made of the insanity of hostility or fear. And the whole idea, and I join with you in doing that, is for people to create the best year yet of our eternal lives. We've been speaking with Edie Sangiovese, author of Divorce Vows. And thank you for being with us. It's been delightful. I'll look forward to the next time we talk. Blessings. Everybody in the audience, have a great day. Bring a stranger to the show.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.yagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.